I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Real Salt Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
Hey, everybody. Second hour of the program. Glad to have you with us. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell, we got the PGA Championship up on the old board in here, watching some golf as we're just going through our jobs. How fun is our life talking about sports, watching it all at the same time? Also able to dip in on the phone line with.
Well, there's deep discussion now.
Oh yeah,
when you talk about Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher, that gets deep right there.
Those two guys, man, they made my day. They made my day. They might have made college football worse for the day. Yeah. Made my day, though.
Well, no, it's a good time because it's like May.
Oh, right? For sure.
Don't do this August.
Yeah. I don't have time for it.
No, we got other things.
I
got to
cover
about.
Actual football games.
Yeah.
This right here, this is what I live for. We're kicking off the hours we always do. Jumping in with a guest right off the top. It's The Cut right here on the program. Let's jump into it.
The other question. Undeniable, unrivaled, top sports story of the hour. Here's what made The Cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
The Cut brought to you by University of Utah Health. At University of Utah Health, you get the same great care that the Jazz RSL and the Utes all trust. Visit uofuhealth.org for more information. Proud sponsors of The Cut. Dave McCann joining us on the program. Dave, it's good to talk to you, man. Thanks for being on with us.
Hey, I'm just glad to make the cut. I remember when I was in ninth grade, all of my buddies and I, we were decent basketball players.
Sure.
We tried out for the Orem freshman team.
And
everyone that was a certain height made the first cut, and that did not include me.
Oh.
And that was the end of my basketball career. So I had to figure out a way to stay involved and make money at it, and got into writing and radio and newspaper, and the rest is that. But it started with a cut.
Yeah.
That was devastating. All my buddies were on the team, and I wasn't.
Well, how do you feel today that you made the cut? Does it put pressure on you to perform here?
Have you thanked that freshman coach for making that cut?
Because you did make the cut today. You're on the show, Dave.
I've moved on with my life. I got over it.
Let me. Now, Dave, you're a golfer. You're a member
I'm
of the
a bad golfer.
You're a member at the Riverside Country Club. Is there anybody that is as famous as you in the locker room next to your locker?
Ryan Smith is just a few over.
Yeah, there you go.
That's it. We're in the corner, and there are a few other guys in there. But
so is Ryan Smith.
His name we all know.
Is he famous because he now owns the Utah Jazz?
Yeah.
Would he be as famous if he didn't own the Jazz?
Well, he'd be a different famous. He's a sports famous because of the Jazz ownership. He was a guru, technical,
right,
famous guy in the world of Qualtrics and still is. But, you know, now that he's moved into basketball, I think that's kind of how we see him. I always see him. Seems like he's got a Jazz hat on. And he plays golf there about as much as Danny Ainge. So I know they do a lot of Jazz meetings on the course.
Oh yeah,
well, that's where the best work gets done.
Write off those meetings too. So, Dave, I do have some stats for you because the PGA Championship's up on the screen here. Former PGA Championship winner John Daly. Somebody kept a tally on all the things that he put in his body during his round of 18 of golf today. So let's go over it. Take a I just want you to think about where you'd be at on this list.
Are we guessing?
No.
Or
okay.
Are we going to?
Okay, yeah, let's do the guess.
Like how many things he put into his body?
No, not things. So I'll give you the thing. You tell me how many he put in.
Oh.
So, Dave, how many Diet Cokes did John Daly consume over 18 holes?
Let's see. I'm going to guess over a dozen.
It's exactly a dozen, 12 Diet Cokes during a round of 18. That's pretty good. That's only one every...
It's not every hole.
It's not even every other hole. Yeah. It's like one every hole and a quarter. Yeah, yeah. You're getting through it. Scott, how many cigarettes were consumed by John Daly during the round?
I'll say...
he didn't eat them, by the way.
No, I know. I'll say a pack and a half.
Well, give me a number.
Oh, I don't know how many's in it.
Well, give me a number.
I'll go. No, it's not that many. I'll go 15.
15 cigarettes. You were under. It's 21 cigarettes.
Oh my goodness.
More than one a hole. And wow. Then here's my favorite.
Okay, well, there's some par fives in there.
You got. Yeah, those are lengthy.
There's only
lengthier.
Two though.
A little bit lengthier.
Well, the par fours are pretty long.
How
too.
Many packs of peanuts, Dave McCann, did John Daly go through?
So he's smoking and eating peanuts at the same time?
Peanut M&Ms. Peanut M&Ms.
Oh,
peanut M&Ms.
Well, peanuts are very different than peanut M&Ms.
Yeah. How many
packs? How many packs of peanut M&Ms? Yes. I'm assuming they're the share size, not like the Costco bucket, but you know.
I don't know. I'm going to go 10 because I don't even know how you smoke and eat peanut M&Ms at the same time.
Well, you just wash it all down with the Diet
Kramer,
Coke.
Kramer did it on Seinfeld. And look, it's only six packs of king-size peanut M&M's, so then they got through six.
That's not that many.
That is a crap ton of M&M's.
Is that all he? Is that all he consumed?
Oh, how much water did he drink during the round?
So he was chasing the Diet Cokes with water?
I mean, I guess.
Well, if he drank 12 Diet Cokes... I guess you could probably have 12 waters.
Yeah.
It was hot.
That's a trick question. He had 0 ounces of water. that was according to the person
that
who
was following. That up. Let me tell you, when I was a reporter in Vegas and the PGA Tour came through, and back when the Desert Inn was one of the three courses they played, my cameraman, myself, and John Daly, we walked 9 holes with him doing a piece on him, put a microphone on him, and he had his 2-iron and a putter. And a cigarette dangling from his lip. I don't even know how it stayed on his lip, but it was just there.
It's dry in the desert.
Time, and he just crushed the
and
ball.
He killed it.
Yeah.
And it was like he wasn't even paying attention, and it just nailed
no,
it.
This is a guy
what
who,
a character.
It's a guy who that's a guy who hit 65 on his home course with his shoes off. So, you know, it's like it's a pretty interesting deal. I love watching these guys, but at some point they've hit a golf ball so many times it's almost like when they do those trick shots where they hit them across the water there at the Masters and they're all doing it, you go, oh, there's something different here. Like these guys are on an insane level. It's like the Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, the horse contest they used to have, the pig contest they used to have, on TV because it's like they could hit it from wherever. Dave, we brought you on one because of your golf knowledge, and I knew you'd appreciate the John Daly list of things that he ate during his round. But
I did appreciate that.
Listen, BYU's got a lot of things they've changed up scheduling wise because they've opted out of the Utah State deal, and Tennessee bought out BYU for that game for $2 million and are walking away from that one. And you know, BYU's got a lot of weird decisions to make going to the Big 12. What's kind of the wisdom going forward on these games? I know it's a game by game and a year by year and a team by team basis, but what's kind of the thought of what those out of conference schedules should look like for BYU over the next few years as they get in the Big 12?
I think we're seeing it where losing the Tennessee game was a bummer. I've been back there for games. I thought it'd be awesome for them to come here. But you know, if you're playing in the Big 12 or the Pac-12 or the Big 10 or whatever, to not have two P5s in your first three, that's okay for the coach and for what they're trying to do. And so I think we're going to see this one P5 and a G5 and an FCS. And this actually opens the door for that. It's the pattern Utah's been doing for a long time. And the question will BYU and Utah be the one P5 moving forward for each other, which I hope's the case once they get back together in a couple seasons, at least for the next five, they're scheduled out. But yeah, I think that's how it's going to be. And in the past, if BYU were to lose the Tennessee game, it would be devastating. But moving into a conference where you have all the benefits of being in a conference and having a 9-game schedule with P5 opponents eliminates that. For the fan, we're disappointed, but for Tom and Kalani moving forward, they're getting all the steak and potatoes handed to them from the league, and now it's, okay, what do you want on the side? You want Weber State, you want Utah, and you want UNLV, or Utah State for that matter. And I'm not exactly sure why that fell apart outside of BYU wasn't in a position to commit 4 years. I don't know if they wanted to commit 2 years in Logan. The Utes, I think, got beat up there in 12 or 13, and they have no business going back. It's not even on their thought process, and I think that's kind of how BYU's thinking too, is why would we ever go to Logan? And Aggie fans will hate that because half my family goes to Utah State, and I love that game, but why would you go to Logan if you can get UNLV to come to Provo or even San Diego State, who the Utes host this year? They're a legit G5 program. And so I think that's what we're seeing. But I was sure bummed to, you know, $2 million is nothing to Tennessee to schedule a game in Nashville, sell that thing out, and have a better shot of beating Virginia than they would have in Provo against BYU.
Yeah, with the college football playoffs where it is today, and you're a Power 5 school like BYU is now becoming, you have a legitimate shot at making the playoffs, and so your schedule becomes really, really important, and you've got to have some breathing room in there somewhere along the way. I'm curious what you think. You know, Texas, Oklahoma, they're clearly the marquee programs in the Big 12, but they're leaving. Who becomes that program or programs when they're gone?
Well, they're fortunate in basketball that they'll be just as good, if not better.
Right.
In football, I think it's, you know, there isn't another Texas in the country, and there isn't another Oklahoma. And Texas will still be a big dog in the SEC. That doesn't mean they're going to win. They can't even win in the Big 12. But as far as the biggest budget in the country and history and all that stuff, they fit in just fine in the upper echelon of the SEC. And Oklahoma, who's better than Texas, won't have that same, you know, thing going in, but they'll be good enough to compete at the highest level in that league. I think it leaves Oklahoma State. It leaves Baylor, and we'll see if Baylor can sustain what they got last year, which they hadn't had in a long time, but they locked in their head coach, and I think they're in for the long haul, won the Sugar Bowl, won the Big 12. Those two, probably, and that's why I feel like BYU's got a legitimate shot to go in and compete in the middle to upper half right away. I'm not saying they'll go in and win it. I think they can go in and compete in the middle to upper half as Texas and Oklahoma leave.
You know,
do you think really? Sorry, Alex. Do you think BYU goes in believing that they can actually win? Because I know when Utah went into the Pac-12, like they had a legitimate shot at winning the South title like their first year, and I don't think they really believed quite yet that they belonged in the program. I mean, do you believe that the BYU kind of sees itself as a real contender early on?
It's a little different with BYU and Utah because Utah went in cold to the, you know, one year they're in the Mountain West and the next year they're in the Pac-12, and they didn't have 10 years to build up. And BYU's had that as an independent. So I think that gives them a little bit different footing going in. I think middle to upper half is realistic. And if I were to say that I think they go in and compete for the title, you'd say, you know, I'm wearing my blue glasses,
but you always wear your blue glasses.
Middle to upper is, I think, fair. And they've been preparing for that. Even this season, they get another full season with a legit P5 schedule just to get ready for the Big 12. And Utah didn't have that luxury. And so the Pac-12 hasn't been great for a long time, and the Utes got in there and had a shot at it, but now look how they've built. Now they're built to last. And I think BYU goes into the Big 12 having been built and need to get a little stronger, but they're not, you know, they're not coming out of their last Mountain West season and all of a sudden they got to go to Stillwater. Well, so I think that's a difference.
It, just to make you maybe feel a little bit better, and that you're not trying to like just totally slant it toward the BYU direction because that's your employer. But the we had a national writer on last week, and we were like, what do you think the expectations for a team like BYU should be going into the Big 12? He goes, win the dang thing. The best teams are leaving. I mean, like, historically the best teams are leaving. Why can't you just plug yourself in there and just be in the mix every year? And I thought that speaks to Scott, because Scott's big thing is he hates when programs go in and go, we just want to be competitive. We don't, you know, our goals are we want to be competitive. We want to, you know, we want to win our South Division, you know, all this stuff. It's like, just if you're going to go in there and you have all these guys and you have all this talent, and BYU, you could imagine if they could really put something special together this year. The problem is they're likely going to be losing Jaren Hall at the end of the season, and so that might be the biggest thing that'll knock them down, maybe just a notch or two. You lose a starting quarterback, but they have a ton of talent coming in, arguably the best they've ever had, and they'd be coming off of three ridiculously good seasons, especially with this schedule this year. I mean, it's going to be insane. So everybody else thinks that BYU should have a shot right off the bat. So why not? Why not BYU
fans?
I think
that's what makes Baylor so intriguing for the home opener, is they went down there, they got manhandled at line of scrimmage, lost by a couple of touchdowns, had chances to make it closer, and Baylor had chances to make it wider. But now Baylor comes here, and they've lost some guys, and BYU has gained some guys and gotten a little bit better, and now they got them at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. If BYU can win that game, and then I think it gives at least BYU fans who are realistic, something to go on with. Okay, that's the defending Big 12 champion. They were in Provo, and we beat them. So why wouldn't we be able to beat them every other year at least when they come back? And that's the conference champion. So in that light, I think September 10th is going to be really, really interesting. And then what BYU has not been able to do, which you guys well documented, is get through the season healthy, which is how you're going to have to be 12.
Right.
And so we'll see how they do this year. They're bigger, stronger, faster. When we've heard that before. I've seen it. I was at spring drills and know what they're up to. But can they stay standing after you know, how many people will be standing after Notre Dame and Arkansas in that two-week swing? We'll see. And if they're in good shape moving forward, then why not go into the Big 12 and be a nightmare for every team that you play, and every win that you get won't be an upset.
The massive back and forth that we've watched over the last 24 hours between Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher, it's concerning to say the least for people who are college football fans, because it's shining a light on programs that most programs in the country are not able to compete with, not just on a talent level, not just on a national championship hopeful level, but with the money side of things. So when you see this back and forth that Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban have been having, and they've been throwing some numbers around, and you heard Nick Saban say that they had 25 guys share about you know, $3 million last year, not equally, of course, but that's an insane amount of money, and something that I don't know if BYU will, one, ever compete with or ever want to be like in that arena of going, yeah, we just throw a ton of money at these guys. What's the state of NIL look like after this bickering match between these two big, giant coaches?
Well, I don't think the church will ever let it come to what you just explained at BYU. That's just not in step with how business is done here. And NILs, to an extent, absolutely. They're legal, do them right, benefit the athlete, but when you're starting to talk about this kind of money, that's just not going to fly here, and I think we all know that. I think the fact that those two guys are going after each other is an indicator of just how big of a problem this is, because those two, especially Alabama, they don't have to say anything to anybody. They raise the money they need, they get who they get, and they win typically year in and year out. If they lose, it's usually in the championship game. Or so it feels. So the fact that Saban is talking about A&M buying all their players, I just wonder what the Monopoly board looks like at their level compared to the ones that everyone else is playing. But it has to be off the charts, and there has to be a big problem.
It's just as concerning, too, because then you go, well, then nobody has a shot. It's only going to be these guys.
I think Nick Saban was talking to his own people saying, We need to step up our game here. We can't let Texas A&M.
Let's go. Let's make
because they really technically can't get involved in it, and it's got to be outside of the coaches in the school's hands.
But let's be honest, most teams don't have a shot. And
The
same group of teams are the ones that are playing and have been playing for a while, and every now and then one will sneak in. But, you know, Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, occasionally Clemson. I guess Clemson's been in there too. But it's usually the same group of six that play in the group of four. And everyone else is really, really good and almost there. Had the greatest season ever if you're Cincinnati and almost got there. But in reality, they're playing for their prize, and everyone else is playing for the next biggest prizes, like go to the Rose Bowl, go to the Fiesta Bowl, go to the Sugar Bowl. But the college football playoff is set apart for those teams. That doesn't sound fair, and it doesn't sound right, but those are the teams that have the players to get there, and they get there every year. So, you know, BYU won the 1984 national championship. I'm not exactly sure. The game is so different now. And I think Washington was number two that year, and look where Washington is. They're totally off the map. So that was so long ago, and it was great that it happened. But in today's world, BYU isn't playing for a national championship. They're playing for a shot. They have a shot, or at least they'll get a shot. Same thing with Utah. You can get close, but when you look at that group's set up to kind of feed themselves.
Yeah.
So when the king of that group's arguing about NILs, look out, because there's some serious money being thrown around.
And we're all looking and going, and we're all just laughing, going, that is an insane thing. We knew the money was going to be wild. We knew that those big programs and those big donors were going to have their way about being able to get that money to those kids. So
the greatest thing about all of it is, despite, and it's not over yet, but despite where it goes, those two teams get to run out of the locker room and play each other
yes.
in the fall. And that's must see TV.
Absolutely. I just said, I don't even need to see the game. Just show me the last 2 minutes of the football game, and then if they walk across the field and actually cross paths with one another with their opposing state troopers looking at each other, that's always my favorite with these kind of guys. So Dave McCann, you can read his byline at the Deseret News. And by the way, all the stuff we've talked about, if you haven't read the write-up about what Tom Holmoe is doing as well to try to get back to scheduling somebody else to replace the University of Tennessee on their schedule and many other things. So Dave, of course, is on BYU TV, friend of our program, and we love having him on. Dave, thanks for hanging out with us, man.
Hey, baseball tonight at 6 on the app. I'll see you there.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Dave's calling the baseball game down there at Miller Ballpark, so we appreciate it, man. It's cool. Baseball, college baseball is the best. So, all right, we're going to take the break here. We'll come back. More to go here on the program. Stick around with us. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280, The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
He's here.
Your home for the best coverage of the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies.
Y'all ready?
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
It's our show, all right?
On 97.5, 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280, The Zone of The Zone Sports Network. Thanks for being with us. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Lots going on a Thursday edition of the program. We're watching up on the screen some PGA Championship action. Rory McIlroy, stroke ahead of Zalatoris, who's at 4-under. So 5-under, 4-under, those are your first and second place golfers there. And then it kind of goes down the list there, but Tiger Woods ending the day at a 4-over 74, Scott. Puts himself in a little bit of a bad position here in going into day two. He's got to have a good day two, but everybody who watched him, we heard going into this thing all week, oh, this guy, he's as strong as he's been. Feels as good as he's felt, right? And then – you know,
well, he looked
and then
good. He looked good early on. I mean,
right.
He looked like he was going to have a good round.
Ended with a 74, and then everybody goes, ooh, leg doesn't look good. He's been limping. And then you go, oh, well, shoot.
I have to imagine, you know, the golf course is somewhat undulating, and I have to imagine that he's probably, you know, it's probably has some kind of effect. He doesn't play a lot of competitive golf. I mean, they brought it up. They go, okay, I got in a car accident that about lost my life, and then my first competitive round is the Masters, and my second competitive round is the PGA
Championships. Yeah,
I mean,
man, it's got to be a ton. It's got to be a lot. I mean, the guy's been getting his body ready for it and everything. But well, of course, we've been checking in all week, and we're gonna do it again with Brian Taylor of Real Golf Radio. So without further ado, here we go, kicking things off from the PGA Championship.
This Uinta Golf PGA Championship update with Brian Taylor is brought to you by Mountain Land Supply, Zions Bank, Hope's Vision, Siegfried & Jensen, and Black Desert Resort. And now, Real Golf Radio's Brian Taylor.
Yeah, I hit it really good. I would have liked to have a few more fall. Some of the closer looks that I had some really good looks today. But, I mean, on this golf course, I did about everything I could ask for on the first day. I made it relatively easy because of how good I hit it off the tee. And when I did get out of position, I missed it in the right areas to lay up like on five today in a position where I could still hit the green. So I played really solid, smart golf. It could have been better, but it also could have been worse. So I played really nicely, and I think it's a good start.
Little chunk of Brian Taylor speaking with Tony Finau, of course, and BT. We appreciate you joining us from Tulsa. And as things get going underway here, what are the takeaways from the first day here of the PGA Championships?
Yeah, thanks, guys. Good to be with you. This is a hard golf course. Most of the guys that I talked to said, "Wow, I don't know what Rory was doing out there," but it's a hard golf course. The wind has definitely picked up. It's been harder for the players this afternoon than it was this morning. Pretty nice conditions, a lot cooler this morning when the players were able to take advantage of it. So it flip flops tomorrow, and that's kind of how it works with the draws. You go either morning, you go early, late, or late early, and so the guys that are battling it out today, they'll turn around and get some nice conditions tomorrow morning. So the weather's going to continue to cool, and I think that'll help these players because it is hot. And I heard you guys talking about Tiger Woods. It was a struggle for him out there. Early when I watched him come through this first, six, seven holes, I was actually impressed with the little step in his gait. I mean, he looked like the old Tiger a bit. They were still limp, but he looked like he was feeling good. And then you could tell it definitely wore on him. And afterwards in his interview, he wasn't feeling good and he wasn't happy.
Yeah, so is the weather going to – I mean, are you still going to have the wind when they flip-flop and the morning guys go out in the afternoon? Who's going to have the advantage, or is there going to be an advantage tomorrow?
Yeah, it's hard to say, really. I mean, you kind of don't know until you get here. The winds have – the forecast calls for winds, both days. But as I've been on the golf course all day today, you've had times when it was light winds. You've had times when it's been shifting winds and times when it's been quite gusty. So – that's a real challenge for the players around this golf course is the unpredictability of it, not only the wind but the rough as well. And so how's your lie in the rough? Is it going to come out with the flyers? Is it going to come out heavy? Is it dead, spinny, that type of thing? And then what's the wind going to do you for it? One of the players I talked to, Troy Merritt, he said the wind never seemed to be down or right at us. It was always just a little across or straight across or quartering across, and that really keeps the players guessing and plays into the challenge of Southern Hills.
We were looking at the leaderboard and a four over for Tiger puts him in that bottom 100 plus, and obviously making the cut is an interesting thing for us because it's like it makes a weekend more interesting when Tiger's in any of these majors. But what's like a really good spot for somebody to be in? A guy like Tony Finau who finishes that first round one under, that's a solid start for him, tied for 15th. But where's a good place to be right now? Not even just to make the cut, but just to be like, hey, I'm in this thing and I'm right here with it.
Yeah, I think anybody that's within 7-8 shots, of the leader at any time is in good position, especially with, look, there's still three rounds to play. So, I would say guys even within 10 shots, look, we saw what Rory was able to do. You're going to give some back, but you could take advantage of it. The players seem to think that the golf course is playing fair. The greens aren't overly fast, but just fast enough. The tour plays faster greens than this, but not where they're as undulating as these greens are. So you are seeing some players coming up, short with their putts because because of the speeds are a little bit slower in order to hold them on the slopes and the wind. But, you know, again, the guys that kind of get the feel of that and know when their spot, you know, get in the right spot, like Tony talked about, where you can take advantage of it and be aggressive with your putt. There's, you can go on some birdie runs. We saw Rory make four in a row. We've seen a couple other stretches where guys have gone out and made three, four out of five, that type of thing. So I think as long as you're within 7-8 shots right now, you're in pretty good position and plenty of holes still to be played. And again, it depends on what the PGA and Kerry Haig decide to do with the setup and where they put the pins, because, you know, they can make this thing as hard as they want. And if they don't want to have guys continue to stretch it out, which you probably won't see tomorrow so much, but, you know, come the weekend, it'll be interesting to see what they decide to do with it. But they could bring the numbers back just as simple as switching some pins.
Watching it today, it looked like from my vantage point that the bunkers were, I don't know, it seemed like they weren't, a lot of the players weren't really comfortable. You saw some kind of funny shots coming out of the bunkers. Am I imagining things, or is there kind of an issue with the bunkers?
Yeah, really good observation. Tiger even pointed that out specifically, that, you know, he struggled out of the sand, whether it was a rake area. He had to guess. So his comment was he had to guess out of the sand. Normally, these guys play under such perfect conditions and consistently perfect conditions week in and week out that when they have to guess, it puts them in a situation like a lot of us when we go out and play. We're not quite sure, right? And that's really, you know, when as a golfer, as long as you are confident about how something's going to go, you can control it. It's the indecisiveness that makes it very difficult. And I think that's what Tiger realizes. It's like, okay, this feels like it's a little fluffy, and so I'm gonna have to get after it. And it actually hits firm, and it makes you look a little bit silly, or you think it's going to be firm, and so you try to baby it a little bit, and it comes out soft, and again, makes you look a little silly. So the sand is definitely something that has, at least for Tiger, was inconsistent, and I think you've seen that with some of the other players as well.
It's funny because we can hear the wind on your phone, and then we're watching the flags on TV too, and the flags and your phone look and sound the exact same. It's like, my heavens, this is not, you know, for a major is going to be tough, you know, but to have this kind of wind and the heat on top of it, all these different things, these golfers have got quite the uphill battle here, and we're just day one. Your two favorites, John Rahm and Scottie Scheffler, those are the guys that had the best odds for this thing, and they're both struggling going in. Scheffler's at even par, and then John Rahm's two over.
Yeah, that was a little surprising. I just watched them come through here on 14. I'm literally just sitting off of the 16th fairway right now. I'm kind of in a sheltered place, by the way, so sorry for the wind.
It's part of the deal. It's like when you call the Weather Channel guys. You don't want them standing in beautiful weather. I want them in the hurricane.
or the guy that's in the war zone. We want to hear the bombs going off.
Yes, come on.
Did you at least hear the applause? Guy hit a little approach shot at 16 when I was talking. I got a little applause out there, so I was hoping you got some of that ambient. I felt like this golf course is tailor-made for Rahm. I was a little surprised to see that he's kind of struggling out the gate. But, look, he's still got time. Rahm's got a ton of firepower. And Scheffler, you know, he missed a little bunny early, and that can play with your confidence a little bit. But both those guys, really great players. I would expect them to kind of right the ship. And by the way, Scheffler sitting at even par is just fine, right? I mean, that's well inside that 7-8 shot spread that we were just talking about earlier. You know, he's currently, you know, five back and still some holes to go. So you can shoot yourself out of it. You're not going to win it on the first day. You can certainly shoot yourself out of it on the first day, but neither of those guys are anywhere near that at the moment.
Dave Stockton said that Phil Mickelson was not missed at the PGA Championship dinner. Mm. What's been the vibe or feeling about Phil Mickelson?
I'm kind of surprised to hear him say that, although I know, Dave's a friend of ours. He's come on the show a lot over the years, especially around Ryder Cup time. He's very passionate about the Ryder Cup. He's very passionate about America, so he probably has some pretty strong feelings that way. Plus, he was back in the era that was just coming off of the new startup PGA Tour. Mm-hmm. You know, Jack and Arnie in the late 60s, you know, helped develop the PGA Tour, breaking it off from the PGA of America, and Dave Stockton was, you know, not far behind that generation. So, he probably does have some strong feelings about what it feels like, a little treasonous act that was still trying to architect a rival league. But, I mean, around here, to be honest, it's even as we were in the press building today, I asked several people, one of my friends from the BBC, who's going to be at that first live event in London coming up in a couple of weeks. And everybody has still more questions than answers. It's still not really sure exactly, but the feeling is that, you know, Norman with his vendetta against the PGA Tour and the PGA Tour's similar feeling about Greg Norman, it was just the wrong guy. And wouldn't be surprised if they oust that guy. I guess one of the main people, you know, I read a quick headline, didn't read the story, but one of the main guys with Liv actually left. And so it'll be interesting to see where it all shakes out. But the real feeling is that the fact that they want to actually take over the PGA Tour is the difference between a lot of the other events that just want to have an event associated with the PGA and the European Tours. And this one, they're coming right after them, trying to take out from underneath them. And that's just not sitting well with folks. And obviously, guys like Dave Stockton.
Right. The political side of it has worked its way into the game. And then here we are in the middle of a major championship. So, of course, that becomes a storyline, too. So, Brian Taylor, BT, we appreciate you coming on the program. Real Golf Radio every Saturday right here on the Zone Sports Network. You can hear them this week. You heard a chunk of that conversation that you had with Tony Finau. But there's going to be so much more. So, we're looking forward to it. And appreciate you joining the program.
Guys, it's a pleasure to be with you as always. And hope you enjoy the rest of this first round. And on to the weekend. I'm sure, you know, this is such a great golf course. I think it's going to produce a nice finish for us. We've got some good players up there.
All right. Appreciate it, BT. We're going to take the break here. We're coming back. More to go here on Unrivaled as we continue. We've got so many more things to chat about. Could an NHL team end up in Salt Lake City? We've talked about baseball before. People always ask Scott Mitchell if we're out and about. They go, do you think we could get an NFL team here? Scott has the same answer every time, and we'll talk about that answer every time as well. But, boy, there's a team that could be here regionally that might be one of those options because it's not working out well where they're at. But we'll see. We'll take the break here. We'll come back. We'll chat about it next.
Home for the best coverage of the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies.
Y'all ready?
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
It's our show, all right?
On 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, everybody. Settle down. Welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5 1280 The Zone Sports Network, powered by KSL Sports. Thanks for being with us. You know what's interesting is, I mean, there's been so many things going on today, but and maybe it's because, you know, our local team, our local NBA team is not in the NBA playoffs, but the Mavericks got the doors blown off by the Golden State Warriors last
night.
Yeah,
they did.
Luka had 20 points in kind of the least amount of effectiveness we've seen him in a while in the playoffs since he was probably injured.
But don't you feel like in the playoffs you're going to have a game like that? I mean, I'm not making excuses for anyone, but
ask Monty Williams. He's like, yeah, you just have games like this sometimes. Like our worst game in the history of our franchise.
You just don't want to have it at game seven. I mean, if you can have a bad game, have it game one on the road. You know, whatever. I mean, who cares?
You're kind of expected to lose at least one of those games on the road, right? Against the higher seeded team.
The pressure and the effort that you'd have to put out like every game, after a while, I'm sure you're going to have some kind of just. I don't want to say meltdown, but just kind of an off night.
Well, so the Mavericks are down one game to none against that Golden State team.
Don't think it's over.
No. Obviously, they went down two games to none in this series against Phoenix right off the bat. Right, and you kind of went, geez. I guess the Suns are going to be walking into the Western Conference Finals. No, thank you. That's not what happened. Yeah, so. I'm interested in that thing. I'm curious as to how you're going to see this thing play out. All right, Scott, let's get to this little discussion here. Now, we usually don't talk about hockey on this program. It's less about hockey and more just about the prospects.
We should talk about hockey.
Yeah, we should.
I like hockey.
You and I like to watch hockey games. Come on. Yeah. But it's just this idea of – so the Phoenix Coyotes are the professional hockey team, NHL team down in Phoenix.
Yeah. Good call.
They struggle. That's in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Phoenix Coyotes.
Let me check my notes.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, they're in Phoenix. Phoenix Coyotes happen to be in Phoenix. So the arena that they play in is not a good one. The Gila River Arena, wherever they've been playing. This next season, apparently, they're playing at ASU at a 5,000-person arena. And they're going to be sharing logos on the ice because you can't have one without the other, and both of them have agreements where they're not. You know, once the ice is there, you're not going to change the logos on what's on and off the ice every time you freeze the ice. So they're like, no, that's what's going to happen. And the Coyotes fans, I guess they just you don't see as many fans out to this to these games as comparison compared to other NHL teams. We don't feel like an NHL town, but we could get 8,000 fans.
We've had the Winter Olympics here. If there's a city in North America that should have a hockey team,
no.
Hockey is a winter sport. I know. I know we're not felt to be that way. I get that. What I'm saying is that's the wrong image. Hockey's actually quite big in Utah. I mean, the Grizzlies have been here. They've had a long tradition of minor league hockey in Salt Lake City,
but we just with
a good fan base.
Yeah, but we just have. I mean, if you ask the average person, what's their interest level in hockey here? I mean, aside from Eric, who's wearing his Avalanche gear right now.
You know what my interest is? If they had NHL hockey here, I'd buy season tickets.
You would?
I absolutely.
Well, I mean,
would.
as soon as we went to the Grizzlies games when we did a couple events there, Scott's like taking his kids on the weekends.
I'm telling you this. You're missing out on a great experience if you never go watch a hockey game. It's incredible.
I get it.
It is so amazing.
Look, when the Dallas Stars came
to Dallas. It's so fast-paced, and these athletes are just tremendous. And the skill they have is just off the charts.
When the Dallas Stars came to Dallas when I was a kid, this was – if you would have asked me right off the bat, like, hey, we're going to move the North Stars from Minnesota – do you have to ask if Minnesota's a hockey town?
Right.
No. Or a hockey state? No. But they moved the Stars from Minneapolis down to
Minnesota.
Down to the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and guess what? Texans became the biggest freaking hockey fans on the planet. They chalked. Yeah. I mean, listen, yeah. And guess what? When I was a kid, I mean, I'm 14, 15 years old. I go and watch Wayne Gretzky when he was a king. The last couple seasons that he was playing in the NHL. And I'm watching Wayne Gretzky. I get to go see the great one at an arena play in a professional hockey game against the local team that was there. And we were hooked. We were like, hey, look at this. Marty McSorley got a major and was thrown out of the game because he punched a bunch of people in the face during, like, you know, like reached over the glass and started punching people on the other bench. And guess what? I was like, this is amazing. It was a 6-0 win for the Stars over Wayne freaking Gretzky. And I remember being like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
I go to Detroit, Michigan. I'm there. I watch the sports on TV.
Dude.
You know what they lead in with the sports?
The friggin' Red Wings. The Red Wings. Yes.
You know what's on the front page of every sports page in Detroit? The Red Wings. And it's the only place I ever was that, like the story was always the NFL.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I'm like, wait, this is the Detroit Lions.
What year did they win the Stanley Cup? Were you
several
there?
Times when I was there.
So yeah. Stevie Yzerman is at the – oh, boy. Speaking of number 19.
I have his jersey.
I have a signed
Yzerman jersey.
Hold on.
Come on. I'll actually show it to you someday.
Well, settle down. You don't need to. I believe you. You have a lot of jerseys here.
Well, no, it's like I it's weird. I didn't even realize I had it.
I'm just saying, like, if you could, if Phoenix is going to throw away an NHL
absolutely.
Franchise,
someone
we'll
needs
take
to get
it.
On this. I mean, you're going to push the Olympics coming here. You need to push NHL hockey.
It's just another thing that'll make our city a little bit better and a little bit bigger.
Yes.
Vegas does it with the Dadgum Golden Knights. Exactly.
Just follow their blueprint. Seriously,
well, go to the Stanley Cup finals in year one.
Well,
sure.
No, just how they energized the fan base. I mean that's what really sold it. It is incredible. To
awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing. So,
listen,
well, this is a no brainer. Like, I can't believe we haven't even thought of this before now. Why are we not? Why are people not standing on the rooftops? NHL.
I know. So the Red Wings, while you were there, they won a Stanley Cup and they lost a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
By the way, NHL playoffs are better and more competitive than any other professional league's playoffs. Every freaking series seems like it goes to 7 games and then goes to overtime in that 7th game.
And these guys play. They show up and they play hard. There's no flopping in hockey.
No, there is. It's when they actually really get knocked out.
Right.
Their body flops.
Well, yeah.
You know, it's one of
I love
most,
hockey.
One of the most disconcerting things is just to see blood on the ice.
It's like, a little weird.
It's just so stark.
All of them have some form of their teeth knocked out.
We watched that entire thing. The other ESPN did that thing of just all the teeth getting knocked out in slow motion.
Yeah.
And they're showing all these guys, and they're showing them with all their the hardware in their mouth. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
By the way, the year they won the Stanley Cup in 1997. Then they won 38 games in the regular season, like kind of barely made the playoffs,
right.
Won it.
Yeah, they were a favorite there for years.
Wild. Okay, taking the break. We'll come back. Around the corner, got something fun planned for you. Ooh, we got something fun planned for you. So watch out. We got a little bit more college football to chat about.
We do have something.
We've got a cut around the corner. You don't want to miss any of this stuff. So let's do it. Let's chat together. Have some football discussions around the corner. Stay with us. Unrivaled continues. 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.